From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The celebrity news site TMZ is the subject of a big report this week in the New Yorker magazine. TMZ is the site that brought you the photo of Rihanna's beaten face, Mel Gibson's anti-Semitic rants, video of the NFL's Ray Rice pounding down his then-fiancée in an elevator. How they get that news, those photos and transcripts and video, is a fascinating story in itself. Yes, it's about finding celebrity dirt, but it's also about really digging for what people want hidden. This hour on Point, how TMZ gets its news. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you read, watch this stuff? What if everybody reported this way on politics, on business, on power? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. They are all over the Hollywood scene. Here's TMZ footage shot Monday at the Republic nightclub after the Grammy Awards. You can hear a TMZ photographer hounding Taylor Swift as she walks into the club.
Taylor, when is Kanye going to stop taking credit for your hard work? You're beautiful, Taylor. Is Kanye needy, Taylor? Taylor, I love your girl squad.
Is Kanye, that's the world we're in. Let's see what we can learn. Joining me now from Washington is Nicholas Schmidl, staff writer for The New Yorker. His big piece out this week is headlined, The Digital Dirt, How TMZ Gets the Videos and Photos That Celebrities Want to Hide. You can link to the whole package at our website, onpointradio.org. Nick Schmidl, welcome to On Point. Thank you very much for being here.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Boy, this is pretty terrific reporting itself that you've done here, and I want to really dig into it, but tell us first why. Did you choose this as a subject because it had all these hot names and, sexy people? Is there a bigger issue that you're gunning for here, Nick?
This is not sort of my usual, this is not my usual beat.
We noticed. Yeah.
Many of these names were absolutely unfamiliar to me 15 months ago when I started the project. The idea was to try and investigate TMZ as if it were, to conduct an investigation of TMZ as if I would conduct an investigation for a national security story or an international crime story and just figure out how the operation works. And so that was the conception of it. And as I got more and more into this world, I was fascinated by how they do what they do.
You end up having people say, this is maybe less like a news organization and more like the FBI or the CIA. Both comparisons are made in your piece. Why?
So the reason the comparisons are made is because the amount of information that TMZ is collecting is pretty incredible, and that's one aspect. The other aspect is the extent to which they have transformed Los Angeles into a city of stool pigeons. I mean, they have people that are on retainer, on payroll, tipsters who are calling in over the course of the day. So that payment of sources. I mean, you almost have to sort of think about less about sources and more about almost informants, people who are constantly calling in for $50, $100 to say, this celebrity is getting their hair cut at such and such an intersection or whatever. And so I think that's the extent to which and also how all of that information has made Harvey Levin, the head of TMZ, a very powerful man in the same way J. Edgar Hoover was a very powerful man. He's sitting on this wealth of information at all times.
Is it all that organized like an intelligence network, or is it organic at this point that people in L.A., hairdressers, know that if you get something juicy, TMZ will pay for it, so give them a call?
Right. I think that's a major point of distinction, which is that if you go to the New Yorker website or you go to the NPR website, it's unclear if someone has a tip how they go about getting it to you or me or anyone else. If you go to the TMZ website, at the banner at the top of the site says, this is the phone number to call, this is the email to send it in. And so once the word is out, then that facilitates future tips. If we take the Ray Rice episode in February of 2014, Ray Rice, who was then a Baltimore Ravens running back, assaulted his then fiance in an elevator and at an Atlantic City casino. And the surveillance officers who were in the room that night when it happened joked about it after the episode. I wonder how much we could get to sell that video to TMZ. And at around 4:30 a.m., about 3 hours after the episode took place, one of the surveillance officers did record it on their cell phone and sent it into TMZ.
Let's just get a sense of the range of how these things work. I'm glad you brought that up because I want to look at it closely. I mean, sometimes it's big news that comes first from TMZ. There may or may not be a redeeming social aspect to how quick they can be. This was 2009. TMZ was the first to report on their website that Michael Jackson had died from cardiac arrest. Here's Lester Holt of NBC News.
Well before there was an announcement from a news organization per se, the website TMZ.com had reported that they never got him going again, had awakened him from his coma, and that Michael Jackson was dead.
Well before anybody else. There's Michael Jackson. Flash forward, as Nick Schmidl says, 2014. TMZ released this video of the Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice punching his then-fiancée, Janae Palmer, in an elevator, knocking her out cold. This video of him dragging the fiancée's limp body out of the elevator had been out there since February of that year. Here's a little bit of TMZ's reaction show. After the second video surfaced, they brought it out in September of 2014.
The real issue is not Ray Rice. The real issue is the NFL.
Well, as a result of knocking a woman out cold, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell did suspend Rice for 2 games.
The punishment was preposterously low, which the NFL has come out and admitted that it was way too low.
The NFL says they didn't even see this video until today, claiming the police refused to show it to them.
What about the casino? They know the casino has the video. You go to the casino and say, excuse me.
Okay, it sounds zany, but this is a very big organization, a big cultural institution in this country, sports institution. And within days, here's the NFL commissioner. After TMZ brought out this video, Roger Goodell saying he got it all wrong on the investigation into the Ray Rice case. The video that TMZ made public, he said, was not consistent with the story Ray Rice told the NFL.
When we had that new information, we had the ability to say, we're going to interject and we're going to take additional action. And that's what we did. There was new information that developed because we had not seen that second tape that became public.
And action was taken right across the NFL. Nick, you've got us at 4 in the morning, I guess, looking at that first video. How did TMZ get the second one, which was inside the elevator, the punch that knocked the fiancé to the floor?
The manner through which they acquired the second video is less clear. The Revel Casino had, by that point, gone into bankruptcy. The security officials from the casino insist that the video was not leaked from the casino, that the video at that point was in the hands of various law enforcement agencies. So it's unclear how that second video was leaked. I mean, a couple of points about that. I mean, in 2014, Roger Goodell, the NFL commissioner, who just released yesterday, made $34 million was his salary. And so here again, though, is TMZ, to their credit, holding people accountable to a sense. And what that video did was the first video the NFL and the Baltimore Ravens and Ray Rice could say they could almost ignore what wasn't known to have happened for sure inside the elevator. You saw him dragging the body out. But and this is the nature of celebrity news until TMZ came around. Celebrities could just brush stories off.
And they were doing that. Ray Rice was. The NFL was. Not exactly a complete brush off, but not, by no means the seriousness they took it after the second.
Totally. And that's the thing, is that the second video comes out and it's just so raw and bare. And you know, look, Ray Rice is no longer playing professional football in the same way that Mel Gibson is no longer an actor. I mean, these videos have ended careers. And that's, I think, the impact that they have had.
Give us another example or two of some of these big hits and how TMZ came to have the information on Mel Gibson, on Rihanna and Chris Brown. We all remember that photo of her pummeled face. How did the Gibson report come out through them? How did the Rihanna report come out?
Yeah, so the Gibson report came out because someone was driving down the Pacific Coast Highway and saw that Mel Gibson had been pulled over and called in to a TMZ staffer and said, there's an episode on the Pacific Coast Highway you should check out. That the tip was fed up to Harvey Levin, and Harvey called the police department, and the police department said that and Harvey had at this point
Harvey heard, the head of the whole operation TMZ, yeah,
correct. He's very, very much in the weeds. I mean, mm-hmm. that's so he's on the phone and he calls and says that we've heard not only has Mel Gibson been arrested for DUI, but that he's gone on some sort of anti-Semitic tirade. And the police department denied it and said it was, quote unquote, absolutely untrue. And then shortly after that, Harvey Levin obtained 4 pages that had been excised from the police report that detailed that anti-Semitic tirade. And those 4 pages were posted on TMZ and, you know, the rest is history.
Hadn't those been initially blacked out or edited out of the report?
Correct. They had been edited out of the report.
So how did they get what had been edited out?
It's unclear. I mean, an internal investigation was conducted, according to reporting from the LA Times later on, and several phone calls were traced between the arresting officer's home and Harvey Levin's cell phone.
So, you had Howie Kurtz on Fox News on Media Buzz then asking Howie Levin, how does TMZ get this stuff? And Levin, you report, remind us, replying to him, it's so funny to me that people ask that question. We're a news operation. I mean, that's what you're supposed to do. Is TMZ at some level a rebuke to mainstream media not digging harder, Nick?
Sure. I mean, there's a bit of a sort of Silicon Valley-esque aura to how they represent themselves compared to the rest is that mainstream media is sluggish and lazy and out of touch, and that you know, that they just don't sort of push hard enough. That's the mantra. But by the same token, the mainstream media, I think, would say in some cases that what TMZ is doing is sort of unsavory, and it's not the world they want to delve in.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the celebrity news site TMZ and how it gets all that dirt that the famous don't want out, the operation behind the headlines, and how it learns what it learns. Nicholas Schmidl has written it all up for The New Yorker. You can link to his terrific, deep piece at our website, onpointradio.org, and you can join us. What if we had the political world, the business world, covered with this much scrutiny? What might we know that maybe we don't know now? How do you feel with TMZ? Titillated, dirty, enlightened, watching those reports? Of course, back in 07, Alec Baldwin left this voicemail threatening, insulting his 11-year-old daughter, then Ireland, for not answering his scheduled morning phone call from New York. TMZ got the tape.
I'm going to let you know just how I feel about what a rude little pig you really are. You are a rude, thoughtless little pig.
Boy, does he regret that that went everywhere. 2006, the report on Mel Gibson's anti-Semitic tirade. 2013, Harvey Levin and his team joked about Mel Gibson being stopped again. He was at a DUI checkpoint.
Mel and his date were driving along PCH, almost in the exact same spot of his 2006 arrest, and he had to pull over for a DUI checkpoint. So, was he drunk? Did he talk about Jews?
He wasn't drunk.
No, he wasn't drunk.
And Jew talk.
Okay, maybe a change. I don't know. And last week on TMZ on TV, the founder, again, editor-in-chief Harvey Levin, joking with TMZ reporters about rapper DMX and former NBA player Lamar Odom, both of whom had been recently hospitalized and then photographed out in public.
Did he look? Was he okay?
Yeah, he looked really lively, like he had some, you know.
Hold on. There is something going on. When you think about it, now we have two situations where someone comes back from the dead and it's as if nothing happened. Two situations.
Black don't stroke.
They make light, they make headlines, they do it in a wired way that Nick Schmidl's piece has people saying looks to them like the FBI or the CIA at work. You talked with Alec Baldwin, Nick, and boy, he's still really fired up. I don't know if you have it in front of you there. Could you read for us what he said to you about Harvey Levin in response to the publication of that tape all those years ago now?
Sure. So I did speak to Alec Baldwin, and he told me that, quote, "There was a time when my greatest wish was to stab Harvey Levin with a rusty implement and watch his entrails go running down my forearm in some Macbethian stance. I wanted him to die in my arms while looking into my eyes, and I wanted to say to him, 'Oh, Harvey, you thoughtless little pig.'" He added, "He's a festering boil on the anus of American media."
Okay. No thanks from Alec Baldwin. You know, you've got The Guardian, who called him the Prince of Sleaze. How did you come away thinking about the head of TMZ?
They traffic in information that at the end of the day is leaves you feeling sometimes like you want to take a shower. Sex tapes, letters from adult film companies to various sort of semi-celebrity stars that they've, you know. One of the things is that we talked about the dirt that celebrities don't want out, but they also publish a lot of information that is sort of fed to them from minor celebrities that build them up. Mm-hmm. So there's that aspect.
Give me your exposure. There's,
mm-hmm. Totally. There's also, though, I have to hand it to them, a sense of admiration to the extent that they do have Los Angeles wired. If LA is your beat and you have people throughout LA airport, throughout the city who are constantly picking up the phone to tell you what's happening with respect to your beat, look, you know, you've got to hand it to them. The fact that money is changing hands is where the question of kind of where that falls in on the spectrum of journalistic ethics comes in.
What do they pay? I mean, you report that when that footage came out of Beyonce's sister Solange attacking Jay-Z in an elevator, somebody reported they paid $250,000 for that footage.
Right. Yeah. So I spoke to several people, and someone very close to that deal told me that the number was actually closer to $4,000 or $5,000.
That's a pretty big difference.
It's a huge discrepancy. But the numbers, there are big numbers. I mean, the second Ray Rice video was sold for almost $90,000.
The one where the punch was landed.
The knockout punch, mm-hmm. Correct. The first one that just showed him dragging his fiance out of the elevator was sold for $15,000. And then over the course of the day, you know, photographers are spending $50 here and there for tips. People are calling in, picking up, you know, selling tips for $50, $100. And there's one longtime contributor to TMZ. He's not a staffer. He's a freelancer. And, you know, he told me that he makes on average more than $30,000 a year selling stories to TMZ.
Wow, that's steady income, more or less. We've got a lot of callers for you. Nick, John in Miami, Florida, you're on the air with Nick Schmidl.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
Tom, it seems like TMZ has done an incredible job of crowdsourcing information from all the population in Hollywood, whether they have access, direct access, or some side access to celebrities or people of interest. It seems like they've cast this net that covers everybody. And you get to see the reality of what these situations are. Celebrities can no longer hide behind, maybe some veil of you know, being an outstanding citizen when in reality they have a huge domestic violence incident, or in some cases are shoplifting, and it creates an equalizer. I don't know if paying people for that information is the best way to do it, but it seems like it's kind of leveled the playing field.
I mean, are you saying you welcome it, John? What about privacy? What about, I don't know, decency?
I think in some case, if I were to drive around like a maniac and cutting people off, and there was a video of that, I would really change. Maybe I was caught in the heat of a moment, but I would look at my behavior at some point and say, what am I doing in the light of the eyes of the public? And am I holding myself to a higher standard? And yeah. I think in some cases you have to.
Yeah, John, we got it. Nick, John in Miami says, hey, level the playing field a little bit here. They got a lot of power to be behind veils and walls and limos, tinted glass. Let's not privilege people quite so much.
Hey, well, I do think that was the... that was the sort of originating philosophy for Harvey Levin of starting both TMZ and the show that preceded it called Celebrity Justice, mm-hmm. which was the sense that Harvey always believed that celebrities were fake and that it was his
well,
job.
So
to
what?
Expose
it's showbiz. I. You know, yeah, I
and,
wonder.
So, and you know, I one of the interesting things you'd asked the caller about money changing hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do think as I was reporting this story and talking to non-journalists about it, I find it, it certainly I don't pay for information. Mm-hmm. But people, when I told them what TMZ did, they didn't really seem bothered by it. And that's an interesting thing is that non-journalists sort of say, well, who cares if they paid for the video? The video is the video, which is similar to what Harvey Levin says when asked. But, you know, they also, regarding sort of people of interest, I mean, they also have created people of interest. You know, they take credit, and this is they take credit for creating Kim Kardashian. Now, that's a question that the rest of the world can sort of debate on the merits of that. But, you know.
You wonder where it goes. Mary in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Mary, you're on the air.
Hello, how are you today?
Good.
And I'm just calling you talking about the whole money issue. Well, if they're paying for information, how many people are bought off to not give out information? The hush money issue, this is basically the opposite of hush money, so I don't see a big problem with it.
Money versus money, and it's a wash in the end. Mary, we've got it, and I appreciate that. One more, Charlotte, North Carolina. Jim, you're on.
Tom, hey, important topic, appreciate it. My question was the scandal at Fox News over in England and the links they were going to, I think, hacking people, breaking into their phone calls.
Yes.
And, you know, you can see, you know, something along those lines when you start talking about, you know, money changing hands. People will go to just about any length. I just wondered, is anybody monitoring or accounting, you know, for the money that these guys that this company is taking in? Are they paying tax on it, or are they, you know, accounting for it? Are the people that are making the money?
Yeah.
You know, if you want to turn this into an industry,
right.
You know, which is fine. You know, stars out there, they're public people, because they manipulate the press and vice versa.
No, we got to do this. Are you going to send out a W-4 or whatever it is at the end of the year? I suppose they do. I don't know. But you raise an interesting point. Let me take it to Nick on, yes, in the UK, we saw the Murdoch organization really under the gun for this apparent hacking of cell phones and more. Is that part of the picture here? Is TMZ out there hacking into people's web connections, into their cell phones? What about the hacker angle?
Yeah, I saw no evidence of that. I you know, looked into this organization as closely as I could over the course of well over a year, and saw no evidence of that. I mean, I will point out one of the things is that Harvey Levin is a University of Chicago Law School graduate.
Mm-hmm.
He knows the law very well. He knows how to operate within it. So I think that that's just something, you know, something to keep in mind. But the question of the of accounting and whether they're paying tax, that's also you know, a large number of emails were leaked to the New Yorker, TMZ emails that documented how the organization works. Those did not, that I'm aware, you know, describe sort of payment processes or accounting. But it's a really good question. I know that some sources are paid in checks, with checks. But I know that as the email showed, a lot of sources are just paid in cash as well.
We're going to hear in a moment from Kristen Hare, covers the media for the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, pays a lot of attention to ethics and more there. Nicholas Schmidl is with us from The New Yorker. He's written at great depth about TMZ. We're wondering how far their style of news gathering or intelligence gathering, some call it, could go in the age when everything is wired. If we'd be better off if more of our society was covered this way, or worse. Miles in Madison, Wisconsin. Miles, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hello. Well, you brought up a really good point when you mentioned about how if the media, or if the paparazzi were to go around politicians the way they go around celebrities. I live here in Madison, Wisconsin, and I've actually been arrested a couple different times.
Whoop. I think we lost Miles right there. Let us hold that question of what it would mean if I mean, maybe the means you could say reporters do look closely at mainstream politicians. I don't know, take that for a second, Nick. What if this kind of reporting was applied to our political contenders, to business leaders? Would we have a clearer, more honest understanding of what's going on in this country? I don't know. Private equity guys, you know, in private conversations about how, hey, we're going to get in the market and turn it this way and make this many billion. Would that be good?
Well, sure. I think that more visibility on industries that there is not much transparency is always preferable. in the private equity realm, though, you have to figure that people are being paid compensated so handsomely already that calling in TMZ to say, you know, I've got a hedge fund manager, I've got information on a hedge fund manager who you've never heard of, yeah, making an incriminating call on an insider tip. What is, you know, how is that person going to be compensated in a way that makes sense for them to lose their job? You know, they are more likely, you know, they would, if they have conscience, they're going to take that to the U.S. law enforcement agencies, but, you know, oftentimes they don't. So, sure.
I don't know. I mean, this is what business pages or reporters of big newspapers do and have done and ought to do. But it did strike me when you said that TMZ now has more reporters at the L.A. County Courthouse, I believe it was, than the Los, yeah, Angeles Times itself. And it made me think, are the reporting resources still out there to keep people honest in the way we sort of once imagined they were being kept honest?
Right. No, I think that the shuttering of local newspapers, that's been the greatest impact is accountability at a local level. And, you know, so TMZ, it's just, you know, Harvey has always emphasized court reporting and so therefore has allocated the resources to make sure that there are court reporters that are down there at all times sort of constantly refreshing the window for Pacer, which is, you know, and various sort of online clerk services. They're also, though, you know, they have very good relationships with attorneys, defense attorneys, so they know when cases are about to be filed. They know, you know, they know when to sort of to be searching those online databases as well.
Let me bring Kristen Hare in. Reporter covers media for the Poynter Institute for Media Studies. They think a lot about how the media works and ought to work. She joins us from Tampa, Florida. Kristen, say hi to Nick Schmidl and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Nick. Thanks for having me.
Let's go to the pay-to-play thing first. Is it a terrible ethical breach, in your view, that they pay for photos and videos and information, Kristen, at TMZ?
Well, the way I think of TMZ, and I think Nick sort of said this as well in his story, they're sort of the uncle that nobody wants around at the holidays. You know, he's going to tell off-color jokes. You know, he's going to, you know, embarrass everyone, but he's still a part of the family. And I think most journalists don't subscribe to their methods, but I think most of the public, like Nick said, I don't think people really get the difference between the ways that we work in journalism.
Would we be better off as a country if TMZ-style reporting was unleashed on our political realm, on our business realm, on the realms of power beyond Hollywood, or not?
Well, I can't give you a black and white answer to that, but I can tell you about an example of when it was employed and it worked. So, you know, in 2013, Gawker and then the Toronto Star broke the story of Rob Ford and said that they'd seen
him.
This is
the Toronto mayor who was smoking crack.
Yes, smoking crack. And, you know, it was a big story. Then 6 months later, the Globe and Mail paid $10,000 for stills from the video of another recent incident of Rob Ford smoking crack again. And he took a leave of absence. You know, I think originally they reported that their source wanted $100,000. They paid $10,000 for stills. And they had a letter to the editor explaining to the public why they paid and why that they would normally not do that, but that this case rose to the level of, you know, needing to have that level of accountability and to tell the public what was happening. So, you know, there are instances where I think you can justify it, but I think it's probably much more the exception than the rule.
So you're saying smoking crack by a sitting elected official justified. What about taking $500 million from somebody to underwrite your campaign? Worth paying for the video of that interaction?
Yeah, I guess it just depends on who's doing the reporting and what they're hearing from their sources. But if you can't get it another way, there are people who are willing to ask for money and people who are willing to pay it. I think that most news organizations, though, aren't willing to do it. And, you know, you can look at Nick's excellent story and see he didn't pay for it. He got leaked emails. Traditional reporting, I think, still really works.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace. If you have a passion that you obsess over, if it keeps you up at night, if you live for it, you should show it off. With easy-to-use tools and templates, Squarespace helps you showcase every detail of what drives you. Because if it's worth the effort, It's worth showing to the world. Start your free trial today. Visit squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. You should. Squarespace.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the celebrity news site TMZ and how it gets all that dirt that the famous do not want out. The operation behind the headlines, how it learns, what it learns. Nicholas Schmidl has written it up with some pretty decent reporting of his own in pretty great depth for The New Yorker. You can link to that piece at our website. Headline there, The Digital Dirt, How TMZ Gets the Videos and Photos That Celebrities Want to Hide. He joins us today from Washington. Kristen Hare is with us from Tampa, Florida, covers media for the Poynter Institute for Media Studies. You can join us as well. What do you think? Where would you like to see this kind of attention focused or not focused? Lots of response online here on Twitter. Soul of Miami says, yes, we the people wish regular news was as rigorous as TMZ in digging up dirt on powerful the politicians, industry barons, etc. Rhea writes to us. She says, if only TMZ reported on important issues. Not everybody's so sure. Jim says, how does TMZ find the dirt? They roll out of bed and find it next to them under the rock. But Peter says, TMZ is doing what journalists used to do in big cities, scrutinizing the political and business communities. Maybe, but there are new tools out there when everybody's got a camera and it's so easy to share information. It's all over the place. Here's the head of TMZ, Harry Levin. This is at a National Press Club luncheon back in 2011, describing the kinds of stories he likes to feature on the website.
I'm looking all day long at whether we have balance. I want something important to anchor the site, something really interesting that grabs people. I want photos. I want a video. I want something light. I want something ironic. I want that balance on the page. So it's not any one thing I want. I always want that balance.
Are there things he won't do, won't publish? He said yes at the National Press Club. He said, we reject stories all day long.
You know the Michael Phelps bong story, you know, when he was smoking the bong? We had that 3 months before it broke. And it felt wrong to me. I mean, it felt like he was set up, the circumstances just felt wrong, and I put the picture up in my office for 3 months, and I knew it was going to eventually break. But just to show people, there's, you know, these are the things we won't do.
Let's look. We'll go to that. I want to get to our callers, Rose in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. Rose, you're on the air. What do you think?
Oh, hello. When you were speaking about political information or exposure, I recalled the video that showed Mitt Romney's speech when he referred to the 47%, and I believe that was one of the critical things that drew him down in the whole election.
Yeah, this was in the Florida Hall, and I guess one of the staffers there, like a wait staff or something, had a camera, a video, and Mitt Romney talking about the makers and the takers, and that was a big deal for him. I'm glad you remind us of that, Rose. Nick, is that the comparable to what we see from TMZ? Somebody got that out to the public.
Right. So yeah, I think that was published event by Mother Jones.
Mm-hmm.
And sure. I mean, I think that the cell phones, I think more than TMZ necessarily leveling the playing field, it's sort of the handheld device that's leveled the playing field. And I think that, you know, as one of the callers or the one of the web comments said about them sort of waking up and finding stories under the rock. I mean, I will point out that what I did not see in my reporting was a great deal of enterprise investigations at TMZ, meaning that they don't necessarily start with an idea and say, let's dig into X.
Mm-hmm.
Stories, you know, the tips come in and they then verify those tips and you know, work in that manner. But there's not a whole lot of let's put a half a dozen reporters on this question because that's the one that seems pressing. And so I do think that there's a little bit of a difference between kind of traditional elbow grease investigations and what they're doing.
Wait for the tips and then blow them up big if there's something that Matthew in Omaha, Nebraska. Matthew, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I think we should be having an aggressive press going after politicians and that. It would hold them accountable. There's a lot of people out there that operate without restraint. And if they knew that they work in a public forum or public media, they would act with more restraint.
So bring it on. Right. Bring on that kind of aggressive take and maybe use all the new media and the crowdsourcing and all the rest to help do it. Kristen Hare, I mean, lots of us have seen, of course, the movie's terrific movie, Spotlight, about the Boston Globe going after sexual abuse in the Catholic clergy. But increasingly, that kind of big, long, deep effort is seen as an outlier. Is there a positive opportunity here for the press to use some of these TMZ techniques, do you think, Kristen, to bring a little more transparency, maybe a little more, maybe even a little more fear of wrongdoing into the powerful realms of our society?
You know what struck me when I was reading Nick's story was how many of the methods that TMZ uses are really traditional beat reporting. You know, they have sources, they have people, they know where they need to be looking yep. for things. They're yep. not heading off big investigations. But some of it is really traditional journalism. It just comes with a checkbook. And I think the danger that you get into, however, and Poynter has written about this before, is if you become known as a place that pays for information, how do you not then create an environment where people are willing to set things up so that they can get paid? I think it just muddies the waters in a way that it makes it hard to kind of undo.
Or Nick, I felt myself wondering about the downside here. You describe L.A. as a city of informants. It could seem almost like the Stasi in old East Germany. Everybody's reporting on everybody else, and it just turns into this maelstrom of finger-pointing and fear.
Right, right. And I think, you know, one of the a former photographer said to me that this is the beauty of TMZ, which is that everybody just loves to rat everyone else out. And as someone who is flying to California this afternoon, I'm very glad that I'm not flying on Delta.
Because they've got, you say, an informant in their ranks. You think TMZ will be waiting for you? You have to wear your big sunglasses, Nick?
No, but I mean, they do have, you know, there are sources at Delta. There are sources at limo companies who are, you know, there's a source. They have passenger information of passengers, celebrity passengers who are coming in or out of L.A. on what airline, what time. It's not happenstance that they're catching people in the arrivals lounge of LAX.
Victoria writes to us, I disagree that this equalizes celebs. It just glorifies their behavior. Anne in Burlington, Vermont. Anne, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Love your show. Love the New Yorker. This is the death of the statesman. I think we know the garbage details of everybody's life thanks to high tech and expensive photography and what have you. I grew up with Franklin Roosevelt, whom we revered. And then, you know, decades later, Lucy's name came up. Bill Clinton had Monica right away. At least Roosevelt was allowed to be the statesman, you know, that he was.
So you think we'd be better off if we never learned about Monica Lewinsky?
I think so. And I think, you know, like, who gives it? The French are wonderful. Who was it that died and the mistress went to the funeral as well as the wife? You know, our cultural values seem pristine, but the way we go about leaves a lot to be desired, you know. And I'm an old lady. I've seen a lot of changes in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
This is amazing to me. I'm looking for the statesman to lead me to the next decade.
And you don't
need to, where is that going to come from?
You don't need to know about his love life, and you're afraid you won't get it if we do learn about all that. I don't know. Kristen, what do you say? What do you think?
You know, I think what's, I mean, I can understand that perspective. I think what's sort of a parallel to this is something that J.K. Trotter from Gawker has been reporting really aggressively on, which is this transactional journalism and how much sort of tips are exchanged for coverage among journalists, political journalists in particular. This had to do with Hillary Clinton's spokesman. And, you know, it gets like,
you mean you,
I'm just
you cover this
reading,
event
yeah.
and we'll give you a tip on that unknown thing.
Yes. Mention the following things in your story and, you know, we'll get you the transcript beforehand. You know, this is, again, something I think that the public isn't aware of, and it just hurts the trust that independent journalists have to do our jobs. when we're conducting transactional journalism, whether that's through money or through favors.
I mean, if there's going to be some currency of exchange, I don't know if people, maybe they'd rather have it be dollars than I don't know. Henry in Akron, Ohio. Henry, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you very much. It's very interesting because I used to live in Los Angeles. I knew Harvey. I knew what kind of a sleazeball he was way back when. He is the head of Hopper of our day, trying to dig dirt without any justification. I remember during the height of the AIDS crisis, he would go after people and try to undermine them and expose them with no proof, no anything, just for the story. And to offer him up as a journalist is just beyond me. I used to work for New West Magazine.
Yeah.
I'm a writer, and he's not even in that category.
So I'll take that. You knew him, but yet he is putting things out there. You've seen how much domestic abuse has been addressed now in the NFL context. Do you give him any credit for that, or it just looks like sleaze to you, Henry?
It's all sleaze. I mean, I understand people breaking the rules, which should not be tolerated, but the way he does it, the way he undermines people and fools people and tricks people, it's beyond, it's not journalism. It's sleaze.
Henry, I so appreciate your call. Nick, this is back to the Guardian's characterization, High Prince of Sleaze. What do you say?
Yeah. Henry brings up a lot of things that came up over the course of my reporting. Look, I don't think that Harvey Levin is a pleasant person to work for, according to the dozens and dozens of employees, people who have worked for him that I spoke to. I think that the same tactics, aggressive nature that has made him successful running TMZ, like, makes him a fairly unbearable supervisor. But in terms of the standards,
I don't think that's Henry's point, though. He's talking about sleazy. The stuff he pulls in, the stuff he goes after.
Well, for sure. And I think that, you know, what he traffics in and sort of the information that he – I mean, I do think, though, that if you look at the traffic numbers, he does know, though, what people want to read. And so whether Henry thinks it's sleazy or The Guardian does or we're uncomfortable with it, there are clearly a lot of people who are still wanting to read it. And those people who don't want to read it don't have to go there.
Benjamin in Lexington, Massachusetts. Benjamin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I think culturally this conversation is very interesting because in American popular culture, we are inundated with the idea that we can someday be like the celebrities that we see on reality television and the mainstream media and movies and the like. And I think that shows like TMZ are very important for maintaining that cultural illusion because it gives us the idea that because Mel Gibson can do something buffoonish or because Michael Phelps can smoke a bong, that, you know, one
they're
day
just like
we
us.
Might be like these.
Yeah.
One day we might be like these very famous people, and it gives us this this comfort.
Just comfort by feeling closer to their peccadilloes and everything else. There's no question that there's an awful lot of American mind wound up in that. I mean, what really interests me is whether crowdsourcing technology, different attitudes might push mainstream journalism in a different direction, might bring more transparency, and what kind of resources are being poured in there compared to, let's say, TMZ. Bill in New Haven, Connecticut. Bill, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I think good reporting is still going on through Freedom of Information Act in terms of political and business reporting.
Yes.
And I think TMZ is in a different category. They're just kind of visceral clickbait, so people aren't even reading the articles in a lot of cases. They're just watching a video of some celebrity punching another one.
There's good reporting going on, but people read TMZ instead or just pay more attention to that, more traffic there to...
I think if they stream through on the Internet, it only takes a second to watch that link, or you have to sit down and actually read an article on something political.
I mean, Nick, Bill, thanks. Nick, maybe Americans, this is what they want to know about, and they're not so interested in the ethics of business or politics. Tell me about the latest Kardashian blip.
Right. Well, I think that's what it all comes back to is that, you know, they're in some ways just giving what people want. I mean, the point about Freedom of Information Act requests, sure, you can get all kinds of great information from those, but oftentimes the best stuff is redacted or it's really, yeah. really, really difficult. Just because you can apply for it doesn't mean the CIA or the FBI is going to give it to you. And so the rawness of what they are putting up. Now, granted, I will say that for every Ray Rice video or every mm-hmm. Donald Sterling tape, there are countless of really sort of trivial stories that go up. So, you know, when Harvey Levin mentioned the mix in the National Press Club speech, the mix tilts a lot more on an any given day towards the trivial than it does towards the consequential.
Kristen, what would you embrace out of these techniques, and where would you say no, no, no?
What I think is great, like I said before, is just the traditional ways of going about things that they're doing. Also, you know, I think all journalists want and news organizations want to be known as the place that you want to take information. And that's definitely something they've achieved. Now, they've achieved that because people know they'll get paid for it. But if people begin to know you as the place, I mean, if a couple guys, you know, security guards are watching a video and one of them says, wonder if we could get this to TMZ, says a lot about what they've been able to do with their brand. The no, 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 I think comes to this idea of paying for everything. And I think that their work could definitely use with some sunlight itself. And so some full disclosure about this is what we paid, this is how much we paid for it, and here's why we think it was worth it would make some of this a little bit easier to read and to watch.
The great David Carr with the New York Times wrote back in 2011, he says, it's a pleasure to watch TMZ and a very guilty one at that, but it is also a daily indictment of our outsized fascination with celebrities. We are in on the joke, but we are implicated by it as well. Nick, did you bring any techniques away that you're going to bring over to the New Yorker, make it part of your armament?
Well, I do think that the standards of knowing that the material you have is unimpeachable is something I took away from the process.
And you grant that to TMZ, fact-checking at that level?
I grant that it burned in my mind over the course of 15 months that make sure that what you put on the page is going to stand up to scrutiny.
Well, it was quite a piece. With its own leaks out of TMZ included in the work, Nick Schmidl pulled them out and brought us the whole story. Staff writer for The New Yorker, you can link to the piece at our website, onpointradio.org. Nicholas Schmidl, thank you very much for your work.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And Kristen Hare, reporter covering media for the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, with us today from Tampa, Florida. Kristen, thank you so much. Good luck. Go get them.
Thanks so much.
Listeners, thanks to you. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.